Good evening and welcome to Midnight Harmony and our film story series. Tonight's story is entitled Love Works, the story of a ballerina who uses her movements to teach and retrain the physically handicapped. But when an accident victim arrives in her studio and begins to impact the other clients, questions arise regarding the mysterious man and the haunting truth of his own past. We hope you'll sit back, relax, and enjoy part two tonight of Love Works. Interior hallway, Rockefeller Plaza. The number on the door before us is 360. The door opens and Joey appears. He is surprised to see Cole sitting in his chair in the hallway. Joey: Hey, Mr. Smith, I didn't hear you knock. Cole: You're late for work. Joey: I don't have a job. Cole: You work for me now. Joey: Yes, sir. Exterior, New York streets. Joey pushes Cole along a very busy sidewalk. Though we don't hear the conversation, Joey is chatty and animated as he pushes Cole along. At a crosswalk, while waiting for a crossing signal, Joey even does a little jig, showing off his talent for intrigued bystanders. Cole is not impressed as they miss the crossing signal. No big deal. Joey decides to go for it anyway and pushes Cole across the street before oncoming traffic. Interior therapy clinic, a short time later. Everyone is busy with their own therapy. Addie is on the phone at her makeshift desk. Papers, files, and pictures of clients litter the table. Addie, on the phone: I'd really love to include you, but I'm already bursting out at the seams. There's just no more room. Cole enters, pushed by Joey. Addie smiles, but is busy. Addie continued: I understand your situation, but you have to understand mine. Until I am able to graduate several of my clients, Cole places something on her desk and leaves it, as Joey then wheels him across the room. Addie stares at her desk. There in front of her is the Polaroid picture. Unable to focus on her conversation, she hangs up on the chatting lad on the other end. Joey sets the brakes on Cole's chair. Okay, 3 o'clock sharp. Don't be chatting with the ladies, because I got a date tonight and can't be late. Joey brushes past Addie. Joey: Hey, Addie, you coming by the studio? Addie: Yes, later. I'll see you in a while. Addie stands before Cole. She holds the picture. What changed your mind? Cole: It's to my advantage to get better. Addie: Just yours, no one else? Cole: No one else that's any of your business. Cole tips his head back. Addie: Fair enough. Let's get you started. Cut to. Cole is seated in a more standard chair. Addie kneels in front of him, working his feet, pulling them straight together. It is only a matter of moments before they fall outwards. Addie: That's all right. Let's try it again. Addie continues working with the not-so-cooperative feet. Cole's attention is drawn to Jessica and Becky, where the two work on several breathing techniques. Addie: Hello. Mr. Smith's feet can't do anything without Mr. Smith. Cole turns his attention back to Addie and his feet. Addie works on effortlessly. The room is bustling with therapy activity. Inside the therapy clinic, weeks later, Cole is improving. His feet and knees are together now without help. He pushes up slightly with his arms, moving his seat off the chair. Addie, that's it. Very good. Becca, Kit's daughter, snaps a picture of Cole with a 35mm camera. He's surprised at first, but when she offers a gleaming smile and explanation, he forgives the offense. Becca, Miss Gold said I could take pictures for her. We're going to make a collage. Is that all right with you, Mr. Smith, if we make a collage? Cole nods. Becca moves on, snapping more pictures. The room is bustling with activity. Inside the therapy clinic, weeks later. Addie stands sipping coffee. She is focused on one thing, and one thing only. Cole. Across the room, he works effortlessly, pulling himself up and out of his chair with a low chin-up bar, lowers himself back, and does it again. Becky steps to her side. He's really improving. Addie, startled, looks away. Becky. Mr. Smith, he's doing really well. Addie. Oh, is he? I hadn't really had time to notice. Becky moves on. She checks to see if anyone else was watching, and indeed, Harry was. Harry. He's a star student, Addie. You should be proud of him. Addie. I'm proud of all of you. Harry. You're not staring at all of us. Addie jests. Do you have anything to do, Harry? Guessing. Mind my own business? Addie smiles. Rita crosses the room and opens the window. Only problem, when she opens the window, the glass falls out. We hear it shatter on the street below. Addie, you better call the glass repair. Addie looks up. Not again. Just then, Billy, doing chin-ups on a bar in the doorway, is thrust to the ground when the bar pulls out of the doorway. Well, in fact, the entire doorway pulls away from the wall and crashes to the floor with him. Addie, Billy! Everyone rushes to his side, including Cole, who managed to maneuver his chair across the room. Billy's all right as he climbs from the debris. Everyone stares at Addie, now at Billy's side. Addie, not much of a therapy clinic if you're going to get clobbered in the process. There's laughing. Becca snaps a picture. David helps Billy to his feet. Addie, I'll get it fixed. Now everyone back to work, and be careful. Everyone retreats to their own therapy session again. Addie notices Cole staring at her. Now who's staring? Cut to, weeks have passed. Addie works with Cole in front of the mirrors. Cole is ashamed of himself. Addie manipulates his arms and legs, but he's clumsy. Jessica sits nearby watching. Cole moves his attention from himself back to Jessica. She smiles at him and gives him a thumbs up. Addie strains his arm. Cole suddenly pulls away. Shit! It's spoken with a deep, guttural drawl. But it's shit, all right. Jessica. He said a bad word. Addie. Yes, he did. Cole stares at himself in the mirror. Look at me. I'm retarded. This too gets Jessica's ear. Jessica. He said retarded, Addie. No one is retarded. You told me that. Addie, no. No one is retarded, Jessica. Not even Mr. Smith. Addie exchanges a glare with Cole in the mirror. Jessica, get me that lamp. Unplug it and bring it here. Jessica does. Addie stoops down to Cole's level. She looks at him in the mirror. Never before in your life has it taken any effort to do what you do. Eating and walking, talking. The simplest things never demanded your attention. But now things are different, and it's going to require nothing more than everything you have. More spirit, more sweat, more pain. Jessa approaches with the lamp in hand. Due to the smallness of the room, what's going on in this corner begins to draw more and more attention. Addie to Jessica. Plug it in there. Jessica does. Addie removes the lampshade and sets the lamp on the table next to her. Next, taking Cole's chair, she turns him towards the wall where his shadow is now silhouetted from the lamp. Addie, now again, but this time, watch your shadow. Taking Cole's head, she straightens it. Then, one arm at a time, she raises them slightly, about shoulder height. Gently, she raises them together. A music interlude fills our background as she continues working with him. Cole stares at the shadows intently as he begins to move fluidly and gracefully. Addie, there, you see? You are very graceful, Mr. Smith. Very graceful indeed. Jessica smiles as she watches. Kit pulls her kids close. A long moment, and Addie closes her eyes as she moves his arms. We dissolve to interior stage, place and time unknown. Addie dances alone on this magnificent stage. Her motions are precise, elaborate, yet so gentle, it appears she is weightless. In fact, what catches our attention is not Addie herself, but her shadow. She leads us through a wonderful tale as our musical interlude erupts into a magical story of song and dancer. When we dissolve to inside the clinic again, everyone stares at Addie and Cole. In fact, everyone is so intent on their movements together that no one notices Michael when he enters the room. He watches too for a long moment. When Addie opens her eyes, it takes a moment to realize where she is. Her and Cole exchange a long stare. Suddenly, realizing the others, she straightens herself. Don't you all have work to do? Why are you staring? It's nothing we haven't done before. Everyone agrees and moves about their own business. All but Michael, who suddenly catches Addie's eye. She looks away to Cole, the shadow on the wall, and then to the floor. Inside Michael's car, a short time later, Addie is quiet as Michael drives. So, what was that? Addie. What was what? Michael. I've never seen you work with a patient like that before. It looked involved. Addie. It's called shadow dancing. It takes their mind off their disability and places it on their motions. Michael. And your mind? Where is it? Michael brings the car to a stop. Addie hesitates a moment. Thanks for the ride. She opens the door and climbs out. Michael. Thanks. That's it. Okay? You're welcome. Addie closes the door. Michael sits alone for a moment before driving away. Addie watches as he turns the corner. Turning, she walks up the steps to her apartment. Inside Addie's apartment, a short time later, Addie stands in the bathroom, a makeshift dark room, amidst a red light. She develops several pictures in the bathwater before her. It is only a moment before she removes the picture, squeegees it dry, turns on the light, and exits the bath. Her apartment is simple, filled with pictures of ballerinas, ballets, and something else. On every wall, every piece of furniture are pictures. Pictures of her clients. They are all 8x10 photos, black and white. Many we recognize. Kit, Billy, Moses, Harry, and Jessica. Jessica has her share of wonderful, funny pictures. Addie studies the photos she has in her hand as she pours herself a glass of wine. Suddenly, Addie winces in pain. She knocks over the glass of wine and drops the picture. Grasping her forehead, she gasps for a breath. Spinning, she lowers herself to the floor, panting for air. The pain residing, she opens her eyes, blinking off the nausea. She looks around the room. She sits still a long while. Inside Jessica and Michael's home, night. Michael and Jessica sit alone at the kitchen table, a simple dinner before them. Michael, how's your school coming along? Jessica, it's not school, Michael. It's therapy. Michael, I thought we agreed to make it more like school and like an education. Jessica, I'm 22, Michael. I'm too old for school. Michael, you're never too old for school. Too stubborn, maybe, but never too old. Jessica glares at Michael. He grins. She laughs. They eat quietly. Jessica, Addie said she was going to let me answer the phones. Michael, well, I'm sure that would be a big help. You like Addie, don't you? Jessica, uh-huh. But you love her. Michael smiles. Yes, I do. Not as much as I love you. Jessica is squeamish. Yuck! Stop! We're brother and sister. That's disgusting. Michael, you're right. No more brotherly love. At the end of his words, he hurls a green bean into Jessica's hair. She is surprised. Michael! She tosses one back. It is only a moment before food is flying and Jessica is squealing. Rising, Michael takes control, tickling her and restraining her arms and the mashed potatoes in her hand. Stop, stop, no more, Jessica. No more, Michael. Jessica, I mean it. Jessica, okay, no more. Michael lets go of Jessica. Standing back, he observes the mess. It's just a second before the potato leaves Jessica's hand and cream him in the face. Jessica, now, no more. Michael grins. Now help me clean this up. In the dining room, a short time later, the dining room has been transformed into a simple art studio. Michael organizes his supplies as Jessica lies on the sofa watching him. There is a long silence before Jessica speaks. What are you doing, Michael? I have a new client starting tomorrow. She's good. I think she's going to go far. Michael's busy. Jessica, do they ever think about us? Michael, who? Jessica, Mom and Dad? Michael, I don't know. Jessica, I think about them. It's all I ever think about. Mom, Dad, Michael, Jessica, it's time for bed. You can't answer phones if you can't stay awake. Jessica rolls off the sofa. Good night, brother, Michael. Good night. Michael sits alone, a moment's pause, and he withdraws a stack of pictures. We're not privileged to see them, but his long stare tells us they are meaningful. Interior Auditorium Ballet Company, weeks later. Addie dances an emotionally charged dance filled with rhythm and beat. She is joined on stage by Joey, Lindsay, Jacques, and a number of other dancers. They move like clockwork on the stage. Jimmy, the director, watches from the side stage, and Michael, too, stands nearby, watching the electrifying dance. When it comes to a halt, crew members on both sides of the stage erupt in amazing applause. Jimmy rushes onto the stage center. Jimmy, yes, that's it. That's what I'm talking about. Passion. Amazing passion. Looking to Addie, you are terrific, and you're going to make me rich. Addie gasps for air. She smiles enthusiastically. She's having trouble breathing. Michael steps onto the stage. Are you all right? Addie, I'm fine. Lindsay, Addie, are you okay? Michael, she's fine. Come on, let's get you some water. Michael and Addie exit the stage. Everyone else does high fives and hugs. A successful rehearsal accomplished. Inside Addie's dressing room a short time later, Michael sits Addie in her chair. Finding a water bottle, he gives it to her. She drinks and closes her eyes. Are you sure you're going to be all right? Addie, I'm fine. Really, I'm fine. Michael, I'll help break down and then drive you home. Addie nods, never opening her eyes. Michael hesitates, then exits the room. Addie breathes quietly. Slowly she opens her eyes. An odd rainbow of colors fills the room, but we, again, are not privileged to see from where it comes. Addie smiles, then she closes her eyes again. Interior forest, night. The ballerina dances in the coolness of the winter forest. She dances a sensuous, childlike dance, simple and stirring. Inside Addie's apartment, early morning. There is a loud knock on the door. Addie appears in her nightgown, pulling a robe tightly around her. Coming! Another knock before she gets to the door. She opens the door. There, Becky stands, gasping for air. Addie, Becky, what are you doing here? Becky, you have to come right now. Addie, what is it? Where? Becky, the clinic. You have to come now. Hurry. Addie, I can't. I'm due at the studio in an hour. Becky, no, Addie. Get dressed. You have to see now. Addie is alarmed suddenly. Inside the therapy clinic a short time later, Becky rushes in, followed by Addie. Rita, Cole, and the other clients all stare dumbfounded. Addie moves past them to see what they are staring at. Suddenly she stops. There, where the mirror once stood, is a gaping hole running the entire length of the studio wall. Workers move in and out of the hole from the clinic to the room now adjacent. Addie, what's going on here? A worker pauses in front of the group. Remodeling, tripling your space. We'll try to stay out of your way. Addie, I didn't authorize this. Worker, who are you? Addie, I'm the owner. This is my clinic. Well, I lease this space, but it's mine nonetheless. Worker, well, it's still yours. Now it's bigger. Suddenly, Michael and Joey appear in the doorway. Michael makes his way forward. Who authorized this? Another man appears in the doorway. Mr. Taglioni, the owner of the building. Addie, Mr. Taglioni, do you know anything about this? Taglioni, a man came in here yesterday asking questions about leasing space. When he found out the adjoining space was vacant, he insisted on merging the two. He paid full price for the renovation, said, make it to your specifications. Addie is amazed. She stares. I can't afford any more space. Taglioni, don't matter. The man said, whatever the difference in rent, he'd cover for as long as you were here. Michael, who was it? Taglioni, no idea. Never saw the man before in my life. Don't matter to me, though. He paid cash. So now it's yours for as long as you want it. The group stares in amazement as the workers descend in mass upon the space. Several more workers push their way through the front door. Jessica is animated. She squeals with delight. The others laugh and talk. Addie stares in amazement. Cole watches them with interest, but seems keen on Jessica, who is overwhelmed with joy. She claps. She bites her lip. She laughs out loud. Addie notices Cole staring at Jessica. Cole turns his head, and he and Addie make eye contact. Inside Cole's apartment, night. Alone again in the kitchen, Cole stares at the open music box as it plays out its haunting melody. Pushing himself away from the table, he moves his chair out of the kitchen and into the darkness of the living room. We make out his shadow as it goes down the hallway. A light comes on in the bedroom. Inside the bedroom a moment later, Cole sits in the doorway. A long pause, and he pushes himself upwards out of the chair. He's unstable, but using the door as a brace, pulls himself to his feet. More like falling forward than walking, he grabs the dresser and pushes himself along it. About halfway, he stops. It takes a moment, but he raises his head and stares. There before him on the wall, just above the dresser, is a beautiful painting of his fiancée, Cindy. It is just as we remember her. Long blonde hair, knockout lips, deep blue eyes. Her image is stunning all over again. Cole raises a hand to the painting and draws it across her smile. He remembers. We flash back to the department store in New York City. Cindy grabs his keys and runs to the car. You've got to meet my family eventually, and they're going to love you. Cole, give me the keys. Sydney, okay, family visits out. How about Paris? Cole, Cindy, give me the keys. Cindy, no, we can't drive to Paris. How about San Francisco? I'm going to be late. Cindy, teasing, I love San Francisco. Cole, give me the goddamn keys. Flash forward. Inside Cole's apartment, his own harsh words echo in his mind over and over again. Inside the therapy clinic weeks later, Addie, Michael, Cole, Jessica, and other heroes stand silent, staring at the finished clinic before them. Becky chokes back a cry of joy. The room is more brilliant and amazing than we could have ever imagined. The new space offers an entire wall of windows which floods the place with light. New tile reflects light from the contemporary fixtures that flood the ceiling. An entire wall is accented with lights which enhance anything silhouetted in front of it. We get a wonderful glimpse of this as Jessica dances quietly before the wall, admiring her own shadow. Rita moves through the room, admiring all the new equipment. Pausing at the window, she exchanges a glance with Addie. Addie encourages her. Rita lifts the window, it glides with ease, and doesn't fall out to the street below. Billy, hey, look at this! Everyone turns to see Billy hanging by one arm in a doorway built like steel. Even I can't tear this out! There's laughing. Addie walks to the center of the room. Well, what are we waiting for? Let's get to work. Everyone agrees. A lively tune moves us through the following montage. Rita and Becca work with Kit to drink from a glass without a straw. Harry lifts a weight with his one arm. He almost lifts it to his chin and does when little David steps in and gives it the last push needed. He and Harry smile at one another. Moses works with Addie, who moves his head side to side. Jessica sits in front of Cole, shaking his hand. A pause. She pries his fingers loose and then tries again. She's very encouraging and intent on what she is doing. Cole focuses on his hand. Finally, shutting his eyes, he is able to move his fingers away from hers. Jessica squeals. Addie's attention is drawn to Cole and Jessica. She is amazed when Cole nearly smiles. Becca snaps a picture of Cole and Jessica. Everyone stares intently at Billy as a doctor puts the finishing touches on a prosthetic leg. Billy is excited as he stares back at the faces before him. Cole, too, watches the faces around him. His eyes stop and focus on Billy's girl, now at Billy's side. Her cheerful smile and countenance say it all. Billy's girl. This is so exciting! The doctor finishes. Doctor, I've never done this outside of my clinic. A little unorthodox, but that's it. You can stand, Billy. Billy is hesitant. He thinks a long while. Billy's girl. Go ahead, Billy. I'm right here beside you. Jessica. You can do it, Billy. Billy pushes himself up out of his chair. No one breathes. He stands. His girl steadies him with her hand. Billy looks to her and with a nod of assurance, lets go of her hand. One step, another, and then another. Addie clasps a hand over her mouth. Not Becky. She cries tears of joy freely. Then a squeal from none other than Jessica. Billy, I'm doing it. I'm walking. Look at me, I'm walking. Billy walks right past the crowd of onlookers and into the center of the room, shouting, I'm walking. Yeah, I'm walking. There's laughter and crying. Billy's girl bursts past everyone and leaps into Billy's arms, almost knocking him over. But he is able to hold her and spins her once in slow motion. They kiss. Addie cries. Everyone hugs everyone. Harry pats the doctor on the back. The doctor offers. Now, shall we take a look at that arm of yours? This gets Addie and Cole's attention as the rest of the crowd celebrates. Harry, my thin pockets can't afford that. He looks to Addie. I'll get along just fine with the help of Addie. If she'll continue to put up with me. Addie, of course I will. Doctor, if you change your mind, let me know. The doctor exits. Cole stares at Harry and his amputated arm. This gets Addie's attention. Inside Cole's apartment, night. The wheelchair stands alone in the center of the dark room. Cole's figure is illuminated only by the city lights outside the window as he stands several feet away. He stands a long while before taking a step. This is going to be a long night at this rate. A time lapse moves us through the night as the city that never sleeps peers in the window at the staggering figure. One direction, then another. Then back again. Interior hospital days later. Our prosthetic doctor walks down the hallway. He is approached by an elderly gentleman, dignified in suit and tie. His name is Sam. Dr. Sanders? The doctor stops. Yes? Sam. May I have a word with you in private, please? Doctor. What's this about? There is no reply, but Sam opens a brief in his hands and shows it to the doctor. Inside Joey's apartment, night. Joey's aunt, a healthy, gentle-spirited woman of 80 years of age, appears from the kitchen, carrying a tray of tea and biscuits. The apartment is sprawling. Joey sits in the living room waiting as his aunt enters. Joey's aunt, now tell me again how you two met? Bonnie, is that right? Only now, as the aunt steps to the coffee table, do we realize there is someone else in the room sitting in the armchair. And we quickly recognize her as the Bonnie from the department store from the opening scene. Bonnie. Yes. Joey's aunt. I'm so bad with names. I can remember what I had for breakfast on my 16th birthday, but can't remember whether or not I fed the cat. Joey looks at his aunt with surprise. Joey. You don't have a cat, Aunt Jackie. Joey's aunt, laughing. Well, there. You see? I didn't even remember that. Tea? Bonnie. Please. Joey. Bonnie and I met at the art store. She's an artist, and I was picking up some things for the company, and we bumped into one another. Joey's aunt. Well, how convenient is that? What type of artist are you? A dancer? Like Joey? Bonnie. Well, actually, I'm a painter. Or I want to be. It's what I've always dreamed of being. Joey's aunt. I was a painter once. Joey. I didn't know that. Joey's aunt. There's a lot you don't know about me. Joey's father and I used to go to the museum together and pretend we were characters inside the painting. It was so much fun, pretending like that. Joey, wasn't that a Twilight Zone episode? Bonnie brings the conversation back around. And where are Joey's parents? Joey's aunt, matter of fact. Oh, they're divorced. When Joey was just a young boy. Bonnie, I'm sorry. Joey's aunt, don't be. Joey's had a wonderful life with me. Haven't you, Joey? Joey is about to answer. Drink your tea, Joey. Interior hallway a short time later. Bonnie and Joey exit the apartment into the hallway laughing. Bonnie, she's very sweet. I love her to pieces. Joey, you don't have to live with her. Bonnie suddenly jumps. To our surprise, Cole is standing in the hallway in a long black trench coat. Joey, Mr. Smith, what are you doing down here? Hey! Look at you, you're standing. Cole steps forward, slowly but sure-footed. My sink is plugged. I'm going out and need you to wait for the serviceman. Joey, well, we're on our way out too. Cole raises his hand. Keys dangle from his fingertips. Sharply, here are the keys. Bonnie looks from Cole to Joey with question. Joey steps forward hesitantly and takes the keys. Cole pushes past the couple, ignoring Bonnie's stare at his facial disfigurement. Cole, put them in the shade on the table when you're finished, and don't touch anything. Cole enters the elevator. The door closes. Bonnie, what was that? Inside Cole's apartment a short time later. The door opens. Joey and Bonnie enter. Only the light in the kitchen is on. Joey finds a switch and turns on another. The two stand in the living room in total abasement. The apartment is 7,000 square feet, at least. It is furnished with contemporary furnishings as well as European antiques and ancient artifacts. The wheelchair is folded against one wall. Everything is in its place. In fact, nothing appears to have been used. The place is polished, unlived in. Joey, whoa. Bonnie, who lives here? Joey, Mr. Smith. Bonnie, who's Mr. Smith? Joey, yeah, exactly. The two wander through the apartment. They walk into the kitchen. Joey looks into the sink where a small puddle of water is pooled in its basin. Reaching for the disposal switch, he flips it on. A whir of the motor and the water dissipates down the drain. Joey, weird. Bonnie has found the music box on the table. She opens it. Music fills the air. Bonnie, look at this. Joey steps beside her and looks into the box. Is that real? Bonnie, I think so. Joey moves on. Bonnie closes the box. The room is quiet once more. We take in all that surrounds us as the two continue their way through the apartment. In the bedroom, the views from the window are amazing. Look at this. Joey enters the room. He reaches for the light switch. Bonnie, no, don't turn it on. Joey crosses over to Bonnie in front of the painting of Cindy. Her smile and face are haunting in the darkness. Joey stands next to Bonnie. Whoa, look at the view. Bonnie, who did you say this guy was? No, don't. Joey turns on a light. Picking up a book on the nightstand, he fumbles through the book and doesn't notice as a piece of paper falls to the floor. Bonnie has turned now and is staring at the opposite wall. Joey, what? Bonnie, I know her. Joey, she's a painting. How do you know a painting? Bonnie. No, I've met her before. At the department store. Joey stands next to Bonnie, staring at the painting. Bonnie. She told me I had a $1 million smile. Joey looks to Bonnie. She to him. Joey. Well, she had that right. Bonnie smiles. She bites her lip, gently embracing the two kiss. Joey. Hey, I've got an idea. Why don't we turn out the light and... Bonnie. Don't even think of it. Joey. What? Bonnie. You're supposed to be a gentleman, not a boy from the Bronx. Bonnie exits the room. Joey. But I am a boy from the Bronx. Joey follows, turning out the light as he goes. We, however, stay a moment longer and focus on the painting one more time. Interior hallway. Joey closes the door, slipping the keys into his pocket. He suddenly remembers, withdraws them, and puts them inside the lampshade, which sits on a table in the hallway. Joey, come on, let's go. The two step onto the elevator. The door closes. Exterior upscale restaurant. Night, a short time later. We watch through the window as the waiter crosses the busy dining establishment to a table where we recognize the distinguished elderly gentleman, Sam, from the hospital. They exchange a brief conversation before Sam rises from the table. All this is viewed by Cole's point of view outside the window. He continues to peer inside. He goes unnoticed by a man and a woman who sit at a nearby table inside. He watches them. She smiles. He laughs. They hold hands. Jackson? Cole turns away from the window. Sam. It is you. Aren't you coming in? Cole shakes his head. Sam. I could scarcely believe my ears when I got your phone call. The work was completed? Cole. Yes. Thank you. Sam stares at Cole a long while. Cole tries to ignore it. Sam. God, It's good to see you, man. Are you sure you won't come in? It's freezing out here. Cole. No. Cole wets his dry lips before speaking. What did the doctor say? Sam. What anyone would say if you handed them an envelope stuffed with cash. Cole waits. He said yes. I explained the urgency and he said he would do it. Cole nods. Thank you. Sam. I must tell you, this cloak and dagger is a bit out of my league. I'm your attorney. I'm to offer you counsel, not run your affairs. Cole. Is it a problem? Sam. No. I only wish there was something I could do for you. Cole looks back inside the window at the couple. Sam. Is there anything I can do? Jackson. Cole is distant a moment before he answers. No. Thank you. He locks eyes with Sam. Thank you. Cole turns and walks away. Sam calls after him. You're looking good. Cole pauses. Turning, he faces Sam. Sam nods, then re-enters the restaurant. Cole turns to leave, but pauses at his reflection in the dark plate glass window before him. He compares himself with the male mannequin standing in the display window. The suit, polished shoes, perfect hair, and dynamic stance is quite a contrast to our hero. Cole chuckles before he turns and walks away, slowly, down the empty street.